and then maybe talk about some of the practicalities of professional malpractice liability, and we'll see how far we go. So we spent some time yesterday talking about this idea of mazik b'reshus, if that's the phrase, which you see in some places, you don't see in other places, but it seems to be an idea that when one is engaged in a activity that he's permitted to do, and really we seem to mean more than permitted, that maybe he's actually commanded to do. So perhaps there's some type of indemnity, some type of protection against having to pay for damages that you inflict. And we discussed a little bit where we find that in different contexts, about somebody who's involved in a mitzvah, running around on Erev Shabbos, celebrating Purim, celebrating Yontif, celebrating a wedding, various contexts in which there is certain limited protection as far as being chayiv for damages. So if you saw the additional list this morning, so I called your attention to a couple of things. So first of all, it's a Tosfos in Bava Kamma. There's a few Tosfos in actually. On the initial list, they only put a very short Tosfos, which makes the point, but there's a longer Tosfos which goes into it in more detail. That the first of the svaras we mentioned yesterday, right? So again, remember we mentioned three svaras yesterday, that maybe the dayan, in our case, the dayan mumcha, is potter because it's an onus, he has no control over the damage that he caused, or because of the kabbalah of the victims, let's call them, or because of this mazik reshus idea. So there is a debate among the Rishonim in general about Nezikin, that Tosfos in Bava Kamma, the third parak, in a few places, takes the position that even though we say Adam HaMazik, it's always Chayiv, that somebody who himself causes damage is always liable, even without intent, and apparently even including Ones, but says Tosfos, not real onus, not onus gomer. Somebody really had no control over what happened, then we wouldn't include that. What we mean is that we're very broad in how much responsibility we put on someone to be careful. So like we discussed yesterday, that we're not assuming that you're actually intentionally being mazik somebody in order to obligate you to pay for the damage. So even if it's not intentional, even if it's just pusheya, and even if it's not so much pusheya, even if it's just shogeg, and maybe even if we'll call it even an ones, but ones gomer, you really had no control at all, says Tosfos, you'd be exempt. And the Ramban disagrees. The Ramban, in Bav Metzia, on Daf Pei Beis, the end of Parak HaOmnin, it's also important to look at Betzis also, so the Ramban there says that no such thing. Adam HaMazik is chayiv even bonus. Again, like we said, it's not about your intent. It's not about some avera you're doing. Adam HaMazik is always chayiv. But there seems to be a concept which he doesn't spell out in this term there, but seems to be essentially mazik versus shus, that when one is engaged in a professional responsibility, and presumably we mean a professional responsibility responsibly, doing what he's supposed to do, so then that's the nature of a patur that sometimes exists. So whatever's going on there, Bava Metzia, says the Ramban, that's because you find a couple of Gemaras, there's a Gemara later on in Bava Kamma, that says that if you have an expert Shochet, who nonetheless ends up trafing up your meat, so if he's actually an expert, so he'll be Pater also, that perhaps there is this idea that when one is doing his job that you need him to do, so there is protection from damages. Hi.
So a guy running around on Erev Shabbos, what is his professional responsibility?
So then, you don't have to necessarily say it's the same thing. You know, then you could still mention as far as what we said yesterday, that we know that Erev Shabbos, there's a heightened risk. We know that people are going to be running around, so if somebody leaves his stuff more exposed, It's okay. During the week, it's up to the people walking around to be careful. But Erev Shabbos, you know, everybody's running, so it's your job to be a little more careful. It's, again, since the language isn't really the same anyway in those two places, we don't have to conflate these two ideas. We could, but it's also possible to explain them coming from two different places. Right.
When we're saying heightened risk, do you mean only for specifically a mitzvah like Shabbos, or you're saying any situation where, you know, people are just running around because...
So if that's the explanation, then you would probably say that, yeah, any situation where you know that things are more intense, that it's not necessarily saying that it's specifically because of the mitzvah in that context, but it's understood. In that case, you're right, if this is what you're trying to say, that we should try to define the term a little more precisely. So the Gemara says, Ratz Rishus there. So what does the Rishus refer to? Does it refer specifically to the mitzvah? Or does it refer to the shared mitzvah that everyone's involved in preparing for Shabbos? Or it's not even really about the mitzvah, but that basically this is our cultural understanding. We know that this is what everyone is doing. Everyone's running around today. So therefore, we all acknowledge that each other are going to be a little hectic. And we're not expecting people to walk around so carefully in the shuk. And therefore, the burden is more on people who want to protect their property to be a little more careful with it. So there is a discussion about this whole concept in the Stipler, the Kilas Yaakov, to a Maseches Bava Kama, the Siman Chav Dalet, and you can take a look. But I'll just call attention to some key points. I'm not going to go through the rayas that he brings because they would take us pretty far afield. So if you want to know how he proves his points or how he makes the suggestions that he makes, you can certainly read it inside. It's Siman Chav Dalet. In the newer editions of the Kilas Yaakov and Bava Kama, but just to bring down a few of the points that he makes there, is that, first of all, so we know that even if we're applying this Mazik Rishus kind of idea, yet we do find that there is a Chiyuv for Pshia. That if the person who created the damage was negligent, so then there is going to be a chiyuv. So he develops a theory there based on some Rishonim that maybe that's actually not coming from Mazik. Maybe that's coming from Hilchus Shmira. That the person who's working for you is serving two roles. One is they are performing a job on your behalf. And the other is, they're also engaging either with your property or perhaps with your physical self. And to that extent, there is a chiyuv shmira as well. So the chiyuv shmira, which might even be perceived as a shomer sacher, is a paid shomer. So then, that also comes with responsibility from that angle. So even if we're not necessarily going to see this individual as a mazik, but you might see them as a shomer, shapasha, and therefore there could be a chiyuv from that perspective. And again, he proves that from various examples, which are a little bit outside of our time allowance right now. He also goes on to note a theory in some Rishonim, which is relevant to what we said yesterday, that he thinks that some of the distinctions you find in some of the Rishonim suggests that when we talk about Rishus Mitzvah, that we don't necessarily mean only a mitzvah the person is doing for themselves, but specifically a mitzvah of mutual benefit, which again is going to comport well with our professional excuse that somebody's working on your behalf. So the mitzvah they're doing is not only a mitzvah, but it's a mitzvah for you. So because you're benefiting them, part of the understanding is that they're also going to accept upon themselves less of an ability to be toveya for you. Yes?
What's an example of something like that?
Well, most of what we're talking about is examples of that. You know, if your doctor is trying to heal you or service you in any way, so then the mitzvah that they're doing is not stam mitzvah to score points in Shemayim, where we'll say, well, a Kadosh Baruch Hu gave him a mitzvah excuse card, but that because the mitzvah is also a mitzvah that they're doing on your behalf, so then part of the understanding might be that you're not going to make a claim against them. He also goes on to note that when it comes to the idea of Adam HaMazik Ba'omen as Tzayim, so first of all, we have to understand that we're talking about different kinds of Nezikin. Like we read about this past week, the Parshas of Nezikin. So Adam HaMazik is really different than the other three Avos Nezikin. Now, if you have a Nezek of Shor, let's say, or of Bor, so we have property that might be dangerous, or actions that we do that later on cause danger for other people's property. So then there is a chiyuv that comes from a lack of care with your dangerous property. Adam HaMazik is suggesting that you actually did something to damage somebody else's property. So here it's relevant to point out that when we say Adam HaMazik even ba'ones, so we mean that, okay, so here you did something to damage somebody else, or somebody else's property. And that action is what's machayev you. So we'll say that even if you didn't decide to do this action, it was ba'ones gomer, still, you're chayev for that. That still puts you in the category of Adam HaMazik. But when we talk about mazik bereshus, then we're highlighting the fact that the initial action was itself legitimate. That this action that would make you an adam hamazik is not only ones, but better than ones, is actually something that you're supposed to be doing. So then maybe there is an absolute tour there, and it's only when we get into posheya or mazik that we can address it from other angles. Okay? So far, so good? So again, you know, that's Simon Chav Dalet and Mechilas Yaakov and Bava Kama, if you'd like to look it up. So it's interesting to apply this to some real-life scenarios. So last week on Thursday, when we were talking about Shochet, as I mentioned, this journal called the Shari Tzedek, which is a Choshen Mishpat journal, which is up to about volume 16, 17 right now. So last week I mentioned the most recent volume, which had an article about Shochet. But the very first article, the very first issue, in volume Aleph over here, so there is an article about a doctor paying for damages that he causes while pursuing his profession, while practicing medicine. The article happens, I guess, say coincidentally, to be written by our own Rabbi Herschel Schefter Shlita. So he discusses this question of how do we view the liability of doctors nowadays who are performing their job. So first up, so what potential chiyuv is there to begin with? So when dealing with a doctor, so it's probably not necessarily just monetary in our sugya. We're talking probably about a monetary issue. So you said somebody is chayiv and it was the wrong guy, so he ended up paying, or whatever it is, so we're talking about money. But when it comes to a doctor, so we're talking about paying money, but the damage that he did was probably to somebody's body. So we have a whole parasha in the Torah of Chavala. And we know that somebody who damages somebody else, who's chovel b'chaveiro, is theoretically chayiv five different things. An emphasis on theoretically a little bit, because some of these things are considered to be a knas, are considered to be punitive. And we know from the beginning of our Masechta that nowadays we don't deal with that. I mean, nowadays, we need Bezdin Smuchim, that's our whole Masechta here, we need Bezdin Smuchim to deal with Knossos. So we only deal with issues that are both monetary and common nowadays. So some of the five things that you pay for a physical damage are not going to be workable today. So the question is, what about some of the others, like Nezek, and Ripoy, and Shabbos? Right, so when it comes to nezek, the fact that you damage somebody as far as would be calculated based on their value as a slave, so that's a problem for us to do nowadays also, because how do you calculate that? You have to use the slave market that you have at that place and time. So our slave market in this country has been closed for 150 years. So, Baruch Hashem, so we don't have a way to evaluate. The Gemara said, "Lefi makomo b'shaito," that it has to be based on its time and place. So we don't have a slave market to evaluate that. Hi.
Can you say something you could calculate it in modern days, like the minimum amount people make, something like that?
So that would seem to address Shevis. Right, because Shevis should be how much you're losing from your job. So that's a different consideration. So as far as Shevis and Reboy, which would be the medical bills, so that we should be able possibly to talk about. Question about that?
What about slave markets in other countries?
So we say Makomo Shaito. So it has to be both your time and your place. So in our culture, so thank God we don't have this. So we don't have what to talk about. As far as Nezek is concerned. So as far as Shevis and Ripoy, so it's Machlokas. It's Machlokas Rishonim, whether or not this is something that falls into the categories that contemporary Batei Din can deal with. So the Ramah basically gives us a split decision. The Ramah says, on the one hand, it's not something that we can deal with as far as the exact parameters that the Torah lays out. But still, Ramah says there's more to talk about. It's interesting. This comes up in Hilchos Lashon Hara also, just to give it a parallel. So when it comes to Lashon Hara, so we normally find that there's no outright monetary penalty for speaking Lashon Hara about somebody. However, which by the way could relate to the fact that it might be perceived, even if it's damaging, if you cause somebody to lose his job because you spoke Lashon Hara about them, but like we discussed yesterday, Grama Benizikin is patur. So even if you actually cause them harm, but it's still causational, so you're not actually going to be chayav mamon in bezdin. But you could still end up having to pay anyway. Why is that? Because you still need to appease the other person, the person who you have victimized, either through lashon hara or through physically damaging them. You still, if you want to make it through and kippur, you still need them to forgive you. So as the Ramah notes, it's perfectly reasonable for the other person who has suffered some kind of monetary consequence to say, listen, you can't expect me to forgive you unless you fix the problem here somewhat. So therefore, even if you don't have a technical obligation, but there still is, as part of the mechila process, which is necessary, a justified request that the victim get compensated. So within that framework, we can talk about physical injury today. When are you liable for inflicting damage on a person? So how does all of that then translate to a doctor? So when it comes to a doctor, so we find some slightly conflicting sources. So I mentioned one Tosefta. It was pointed out to me that the Tosefta is numbered different ways in different places. So those of you who looked up Tosefta Parak Gimel and Gittin Yud Gimel and looked it up in the back of the Gemara would have found it. If you looked it up on Bar Ilan, you would have found something else. You'd have to look apparently at Tosefta Ches over there. It's different places. You could be a little creative and try to figure out either how the wrong marker fits or how the right one and how to find it. But in any event, so the Tosefta discusses that certain professions we find that a person, let's say a doctor or a dayan, because it all comes really out of our sugi here, who, this is just to make it a little bit more dramatic, so a dayan or a doctor who is mazik, there the Tosefta says, b'shogeg is pater, and p'mezit is chayav. All right, so do we still have some Daf Yomi participants in the room? So if you're holding in recent Daf Yomi, so this Tosefta, you don't necessarily see all the Toseftas with the Daf Yomi, but the knowledge of what Daf Yomi was talking about a few weeks ago is relevant, possibly, to understanding that Tosefta and understanding why it is where it is in Masechet Gittin. Because there are also Tosefta's in Bava Kamma that address this. And some places in Bava Kamma it says that the Rofe is going to be Pater completely. And in some places it says Pater b'dei Adam b'chayiv b'dinei Shamayim. That his Pater as far as a Beis Din down here is concerned, but he's still chayiv on some level. Chayiv on a moral level. So why should that be? So what seems to exist here is that there is a matter of social policy. That essentially it could have been, both as far as, let's say, the dying is concerned, or the doctor is concerned, that sometimes the dying is going to be technically liable. Right? And this we'll get into more probably tomorrow, just about the filling in these parts about Shikul Hadas and about Davar Mishnah. Right? So on the one hand, Davar Mishnah is a worse mistake, but it's a better mistake for the dying because the property could just get reversed on its own. While Shikul Hadas, the dying could end up technically being chayev to pay. But if that's going to be the scenario, so it means that being a dayan is a very dangerous job for your wallet. Right? Especially some dayanim I know deal with millionaires and billionaires. It's a very dangerous job. So if you make a mistake, the Shikul Hadas, you're going to have to pay for the difference, which could be millions of dollars. So who's going to want to do this? So it's possible that as a matter of practical policy, we make this rule that these qualified professionals, a dayan mumcha, let's say, who's notel rishus, somebody who is established as the most qualified person, so we have to say, as a matter of policy, that in order to encourage him to take on the job in the first place, that he's got to be put. So, Sammy, you want to explain why this fits in where it is in Masechet Gittin? What does this got to do with Gittin? With the middle of Masechet Gittin? Because there, the Gemara's talk about the favorite Jewish phrase, sorry? Well, it's related to those sugyas, but the favorite Jewish phrase that appears, the most famous Jewish phrase that appears in that Gemara, Tikkun Olam, right? The idea that we have to address issues in the world. So, whether it's in context or not. So over there, the Gemara has a list of all kinds of things that maybe deviate from the letter of the law, but if we don't address them, the world's not going to function. So we're not going to have dayanim, and we're not going to have doctors unless we have a policy that says, listen, you're the best person for the job, and you're doing the best that you can, you're potter. Assuming that you're not Poshe, assuming that all of that is true, that you're doing the best you can, and you're the best person for the job. And as we've seen in America, this is a constant political issue, that malpractice suits drive doctors out of the business. Now, you've probably seen a lot of this over the past few years, doctors who are stopping to practice because their insurance is just too expensive. And, of course, that ends up hurting society. If you don't have doctors, then we're all in trouble. So if nobody can afford to be a doctor, because if they make one mistake, they get sued completely. And even if they don't make a mistake, but just buying the insurance is too expensive to practice because of the fear of a mistake, so we have an issue. Shul Yaakov?
On the topic that you just mentioned about like malpractice insurance and whatnot, would that be a reason to say that one, if there was a problem, that one davka, even if it's a Jewish doctor, should sue him in secular court, because if it's in secular court, there's a possibility for malpractice insurance to actually help the doctor out, whereas if it's done in the Beis Din, it's unlike, I mean, I don't know the law. But
yes, that's a little outside this discussion, because it's going to involve all kinds of other issues of our coast. So we'll pass on that for now, because it's going to draw in too many things. But the social reality to be reflected here is that, on the one hand, you know, we do need to have some type of protection for patients who are mistreated, but if we're not also protecting the doctors, so then you're not going to have any more doctors, and we're seeing that reality. We're seeing that there are counties in America where there are no OBGYNs anymore because they just can't afford to practice, which obviously is a huge problem. So therefore, the halacha says that if we need to create a certain structure in order to allow people to practice in the first place and to be dayanim and to be doctors and to perform these jobs that society needs, so then that's necessary. Hi.
So this implies that if not for the tikkun olam, inherently he would be chayav.
Right. So he says, so that's one way of seeing this. And he notes that the Ramban sounds like this in Torah Sa'adam. The Ramban wrote a sefer Torah Sa'adam, which deals with Avelus and Bikur Cholim, and ends up, therefore, everything about doctors and medicine is addressed in the Ramban's Torah Sa'adam. So it's one of the major sources for anything that involves these things. So what emerges from the Ramban is that essentially that's the explanation along the lines that we're saying, that this is basically a tikkun for the tzibur, that there should be a policy to encourage the doctors and the dayanim to function. So then, as Ari is about to suggest, it means to imply then that really they could have been chayav. So therefore, Shapter notes that that might be the interpretation of saying pater b'dinei adam v'chayav b'dinei shamayim. So the reason that there's a chiyuv b'dinei shamayim is because maybe that's the ikar hadin, that maybe really you're mazik, you should be chayav. But we let you off the hook because we need to encourage doctors. So then that could mean that, morally speaking, if, let's say, the doctor's able to cover it, or the dayan's able to cover it, if it's something, again, we often have cases where you have dayanim taking on lawsuits that have millions of dollars or more than that at stake, so no dayan's ever going to get involved if he's going to have to be liable to pay out of his own pocket for a misjudgment. But if it's not on that scale, and if the dayan or the doctor is able to handle it, so maybe the point is that that should be something that would be encouraged if it's reasonable. Along similar lines, he notes this probably also we see by bankruptcy. There's a lot of discussion about whether or not halacha recognizes bankruptcy. But let's assume for a second that it does, as he does in the article. So bankruptcy is a concept of the Dina de Malchusa, that in order to keep society functioning, if you have somebody who has so many debts that there's just no hope that he's ever going to be able to get out of it, so then the law allows him to push reset, to start over, and to clear his debts. But let's say that happens, and let's assume for a moment halacha recognizes that. So let's say that happens, and then the day after that he wins the lottery and he gets $1 billion. He wins the Powerball. So then, presumably, it would be appropriate for him to pay off his creditors. It doesn't mean that he was actually released from it completely. It's a tikkun olam kind of policy that we need to have these mechanisms in place to have society functioning. But, latently, the chiyuv is still there. So, Yisrael and then Jed.
How does being a doctor mumcha come into play here?
So it comes into play big time. So we'll explain that in a second. Jed, was your question about to this point?
Yeah, if you're going to be chai b'dini shemayim, isn't that equally going to discourage you from being a diet for doing cases if you're chai b'dini shemayim? It's a big deal.
So maybe not, because then it's also going to depend. When now we're talking l'fnei mishur ha'din, essentially, so that's going to depend basically on your conscience, that essentially that Bezdin cannot compel you to pay this. So you can know for yourself that, okay, if this is something that I could reasonably pay out of my own pocket, and I know that I made a mistake here, okay, so then I'll come forward and do it. But if it's something that's completely out of bounds for me, so I understand that I'm not being asked to do it, and that I can sleep well at night knowing I'm not doing this. So I have to address Israel's question. Jake Panay and Devoto, same question.
I thought maybe this is related to Tosha Barof and Big Adam, is that doctors make mistakes all the time, b'shogeg, it's the nature of the business. Mm-hmm. So if they're chayav b'dei shamayim for those, maybe that would be
interesting. Okay, you'd be in big trouble next world. He's off in this world, okay, maybe. But to address Yisrael's question, so the poskim write that when we talk about Rishus, So we talk about Rishos Bezdin in this context. So nowadays, talking about doctors, we also have that concept. It's not called Rishos Bezdin. This is the Poskim right. It means Rishos from medical school. It means Rishos from the university. That you can't practice as a doctor al pi halacha unless you're recognized as a mumcha. And in order to be recognized, so our society has the university system, which gives out degrees and which formally recognizes them. So that system has to be in place in order for anyone to really function in the first place as a doctor, but certainly also to claim a patur on the basis of being a umetsha hizik. Now, it's an interesting question, which we won't get into today, but just, let's say, the emergency situations where somebody may not be technically qualified, but if somebody is the absolute best person around right now, so are we able to invoke this in relative terms? Now, what should we say if somebody simply is in an emergency situation and there's no more qualified or no actually qualified doctor here? So, again, that's an issue which halacha has to talk about, but also just in terms of civil law, has become very, very tricky nowadays because people are afraid to get involved in helping because if they are somehow not 100% successful, they could end up being sued, and all the more so if they're not actual licensed professionals. So, as the Shach notes, I can give you the Shach to look at also, so if we take this understanding of the Ramban, that the idea is that this is a policy, a social policy for Tikkun Olam, so again, it makes sense that that's only for somebody who's a shogeg. If somebody is amazing, if somebody purposely or negligently causes harm, so then presumably they're not included in this takana.
Well, presumably these considerations would really only apply in probably a Tikkun Nefesh type of situation. So wouldn't that perhaps be, perhaps Doha, the if while he's saving somebody's life, he accidentally harms the person, wouldn't that give him more license? Because generally, like,
about the emergency.
If it's man law, generally don't apply. But like, if you see somebody who has a cut, and then you decide to do open heart surgery on him, that's definitely not.
So there's going
to
be a lot of judgment involved in that, because it's not so clear what the law is in some of those cases. You have to hope that, you know, in any pikuach nefesh situation, you're protected. From a civil law perspective, it may depend a little bit who you are, when you are, and how you are. Sometimes yes, and sometimes no. People have gotten themselves in big trouble for all kinds of situations. But we're going to run out of time, maybe we'll add a minute about this tomorrow. But just to say one more point. So in this article, so he talks about a real-life case where there was a Rabbi Yeshiva who was treated by a doctor who was also Ben Torah, but the doctor made a mistake and gave him medicine that had expired already. And that the expired medicine was dangerous after the expiration date, and this rabbi got very, very sick and close to dying, and ultimately recovered, but had to spend a fortune in medical bills. And there was a Ben Torah on this doctor, and ultimately it was decided that the doctor was Poshaya, that he's obligated not only to know what he's talking about in the first place, but also to look carefully at the medicine that he was administering. As he writes there, to be Mistakel, Bakankan, and Mashiyeshko, to look at the label and to look also at what was inside of it. Right, so that was the problem. He wasn't Noser. So then he noted at the end, he quotes the Chuvas Menachem Eshed, who has a chiddush there, which has a basis in halacha and a few other places, that you can make a mistake once, and then twice already is a pshia. So you find that, for example, in Hilchos Erev Tavshilin, it says if you get an Erev Tavshilin once, you can rely on the rabbi, twice already, that's a problem. You also find that in someone explained like that in Hilchos Tefillah by Tashlumin, that the reason we only allow you to make up the previous tefillah, but not two previous tefillahs. So some suggest it's because if you're missing two tefillahs in a row already, that's already a pshia, and you can only make up the tefillah with tashlumin if it's a mistake.
Fool me once, shame on me.
Something like that, yeah. Fool myself twice, shame on me even more. So, in any event, so this doctor, he writes there that they discovered that he did this once before, he did it twice before, this was the third time, and that he was doing it to save money, that he spent money, the medicine was expensive, he already bought it and it expired, so he was using it, so saying it wasn't Noser Kankanim, it was, it didn't have enough Kankanim, and so he took the old one, and so therefore he was declared to be a Poshaya, and he was held liable for this. I don't know if that
would be a Poshaya, if he, like, wouldn't that be like a Mazid, which would be even worse?
So I don't know if you call it a Mazid, because it's somewhere in between, because he wasn't trying to hurt this patient. For sure, he was hoping it would work out well.
But he definitely was not hacking the faith.
Right, so, but it's still the category, it seems like it's the category of Shia, because he certainly had no intent to hurt the patient, and sure, he was praying like crazy, he wouldn't hurt the patient. But he didn't take proper care not to hurt the patient. That part of taking care would be making sure that the medicine that was used was valid. And you're pointing out that it wasn't simple carelessness, but he had a motive to be careless. He had a motive, a financial motive, to not pay attention to it. But still, to call it actual, it's a very strong Shia, it's a Shia which you can point to clearly how it happened, but call it amazing might be a step too far, because he wasn't actually trying to inflict harm on the patient. All right, so maybe we'll say another word about that tomorrow. We'll also have to try to get into the issues of Shikul Hadas, the Second Mishnah, and the like. All right, I wish everyone a wonderful day. We only good things.